Pearl stood on the sidewalk and stared at the rain falling through the gaslight. Each drop caught the yellow glow for a fraction of a second before disappearing into the gutter, a brief flare of illumination swallowed by darkness. She had spent the last 10 minutes standing in the same spot, letting the cold soak through her coat, letting her shoulder throb, letting the silence of the street replace the silence of the orchestra pit. The notebook was in the inner pocket of her coat, pressed against her ribs. She had been carrying it for 3 weeks now, adding to it in the margins, crossing out false leads, circling names. The left-hand page held her father's handwriting, the blood-written name, yes, but also the sketches he had made before he died, the diagrams of the silk knot, the list of names he had been compiling. The right-hand page was hers. Vane's shipping manifests, Blackwell's donation receipts, the dates that matched, the amounts that aligned. 3 months of ledgers, transcribed by hand, because no one else could be trusted with the originals. She could feel the notebook through the wool of her coat, a hard rectangle against her sternum. It was the only thing that mattered. Everything else, the attack, the darkness, the man in gray coat standing in the orchestra pit with his leather-gloved hands working on that lockbox, was secondary. The notebook was the link. Without it, Vane was just a disgraced industrialist, and Blackwell was just a wealthy widow hosting charity galas. With it, they were the same operation. Same money, same knots. Pearl turned west and began to walk. Her boots splashed through puddles that reflected the sickly yellow glow of the gas lamps. She kept to the alleys, avoiding Broadway, avoiding the main thoroughfares where the man in gray coat could lose her in a crowd. She needed to get to Alina's. Alina's basement on Orchard Street was small and damp and smelled of boiled cabbage and wet wool, but it was a place where no one looked too closely at a woman who arrived at midnight with a torn coat and a guilty expression. The rain intensified. It drummed against the rooftops, filled the gutters, turned the cobblestones into a slick mirror of reflected light. Pearl pulled her collar up and kept walking. Her shoulder ached where the curtain had caught her, a deep bruising pain that radiated down her arm. She ignored it. Pain was information. It told her she was still alive, still moving, still capable of feeling something other than fear. She passed a newsboy standing under the awning of a closed bookstore, his arms crossed against the cold, his breath pluming in the gaslight. He watched her pass. She watched his reflection in the darkened window. He did not call out. He did not move. But she noted the position of his feet, the angle of his body, the way his eyes tracked her without following her. She filed it away, not the man in gray coat, too young, but someone watching, someone reporting. The streets narrowed as she moved deeper into the Lower East Side. The wide avenues gave way to crooked lanes, the grand townhouses to tenements stacked 5 and 6 stories high, their fire escapes rusting skeletons clinging to brick facades like parasites. The smell changed to the clean scent of wet stone and gas lamps giving way to boiled cabbage and coal smoke and something sharper, something organic and sour that rose from the courtyards between the buildings. Pearl turned onto Orchard Street. The number 47 was barely visible above a door that had been painted 5 times over, each layer peeling back to reveal the ghost of a different color beneath. She knocked. 3 sharp raps, a pause, 2 more. No answer. She knocked again, harder, her shoulder protested. A light flickered on inside. Through the crack beneath the door, she saw the yellow glow of a single bulb, the shadow of a woman moving across the floor. Then silence. Then the sound of a chain sliding, a bolt withdrawing, a lock turning. The door opened a crack. Alina's face appeared in the gap, her hazel eyes wide, her black hair pulled back in a severe knot that had come loose at the temples. She took in Pearl's torn coat, her rain-soaked hair, the pallor of her skin. "Señor," she whispered, "you cannot be here, they are watching." "They?" Alina's jaw tightened. She glanced past Pearl down the street and then pulled her inside and shut the door behind her. The chain slid back into place. The bolt engaged. The lock turned. Pearl stood in the narrow hallway, water pooling at her feet, her breath coming in controlled pulls. The basement smelled of boiled cabbage and wet wool and something else, tobacco, perhaps, or the damp earth of the foundation walls. A single bulb hung from a wire overhead, casting a sickly yellow light over the cramped space. Through an open doorway, Pearl could see the main room, a table, 2 chairs, a stove with a pot simmering on it, and a window covered with a curtain of faded calico. "They came to my door," Alina said. Her Italian cadence was rapid, anxious, each word tumbling over the last. "2 men, in gray coats, they asked about you. They asked if a woman had been here. I told them no. I told them you never come here anymore. She paused, her hands twisting the apron at her waist. But I lied, Pearl. I am sorry. I lied because I was afraid. Pearl looked at her, really looked at her. Elena's hands were shaking. Her eyes were red-rimmed. She was wearing the same dress she had worn 3 days ago, the one with the frayed cuffs, the one she had been mending by candlelight while her children slept on the floor beneath the table. Elena Rossi was a woman who wanted to feed her children. And right now, feeding them meant telling the truth to the detective who had brought danger to her doorstep. "It's all right," Pearl said. "You did the right thing." Elena shook her head. "No, no, it is not all right, because they know I am lying. They know because the man in the gray coat he stood in the street for an hour. He did not knock. He did not speak. He just stood there and looked at my door. And then he left. And I know he will come back." Pearl felt the weight of the notebook against her ribs. It was the only reason she was here. The only reason Elena was in danger. She should have gone somewhere else. Anywhere else. But Alina's shop had been the first place she thought of, and habit was a powerful thing, and she was tired, and her shoulder hurt, and the rain was cold, and the city was full of men in gray coats. "I need to stay here tonight," she said. "Just for tonight. Tomorrow I'll go somewhere else." Elena hesitated, then she nodded. "The stove is hot. I can make tea. You are soaked. You will catch cold." She turned toward the kitchen area, her movements brisk now, purposeful, the way she moved when she was sewing focused, efficient, avoiding the parts of the conversation she did not want to have. Elena turned, her face crumpled just for a moment, a flash of something raw and unguarded before she clamped her mouth shut. Her hands flew to her apron, gripping the fabric until her knuckles went white. "My boys," she whispered, then louder fractured, "they are small, they are in the other room, they cannot," her voice broke. She turned away, pressing her forehead against the stove, shoulders shaking once, twice, then still. "You must go." She walked to the table and pulled out a chair. Sat down. The wood was cold beneath her palms. She could hear Elena moving in the kitchen area, the clink of a spoon against a tin cup, the hiss of steam escaping a kettle, the soft murmur of a voice humming a tune Pearl did not recognize. "Sit," Elena said. "Drink, you are shaking." Pearl was shaking. She had not noticed until Elena pointed it out. Her hands were trembling on the table, her fingers spread wide, her nails bitten down to the quick. She closed her fists. Stop the shaking. It was a trick her father had taught her. Clench your thighs, press your tongue to the roof of your mouth, count backward from 10. The body responded to discipline. It always had. Elena set a tin cup on the table in front of her. The tea was weak and sweet. The color of weak tea should be pale amber with a film of grease on the surface. Pearl lifted it to her lips and drank. It was hot. It tasted of sugar and something herbal, chamomile perhaps, or mint from a window box. She set the cup down and exhaled, her breath shuddering in her chest. "You need to go," Elena said. She was standing by the stove, her back to Pearl, her hands resting on the rim of the simmering pot. "Tonight, not tomorrow, tonight. They are here, Pearl. They are already here. I saw them. Two men, gray coats, standing in the street, waiting." Pearl looked at her. "Waiting for what?" "For you to come back or for someone else to leave." Elena turned. Her hazel eyes were bright with unshed tears. "I have children. I have three children who sleep on the floor and eat bread and cheese and sometimes nothing at all. I cannot let them be hurt because of you." The words landed like stones. Pearl felt them settle in her stomach, heavy and cold. She wanted to argue. She wanted to tell Elena that she was the one in danger, that the man in gray coat was after her, not Elena, that Elena was innocent, that she could protect herself. But the truth was simpler and harder. Elena was in danger because Pearl had walked through her door, because Pearl needed a place to hide, because Pearl was selfish and tired and running out of places to go. "I'll go," she said, "right now." Elena studied her face, then she nodded. "Take the back way, through the alley. The street is watched, but the alley no one looks there." She reached into her apron pocket and produced a key. "The alley door is locked from the inside. Turn this push and it opens. Go straight to the end, turn left, and you'll find a gate. It leads to the lot behind the church. From there you can get to the subway entrance on Delancey." Pearl took the key. It was small and brass, worn smooth from years of use. She closed her fingers around it and nodded. "Go," Elena said. "And Pearl, be careful. They are not like the men you have dealt with before. They do not talk, they do not threaten, they just disappear you." Pearl stood, her shoulders screamed, her vision swam, but she was upright. She was moving. She walked to the back hallway, her boots making no sound on the warped floorboards, and found the door Alina had indicated. It was narrow and painted shut, the wood swollen from decades of damp. She inserted the key into the lock, turned it, and pushed. The door resisted, then gave with a groan of rusted hinges. Cold air rushed in. Rain, the smell of wet brick and garbage and river mud. Pearl stepped through and pulled the door closed behind her, engaging the lock with a soft click. She was in an alley. Narrow and dark, the walls on either side rising 2 stories high, their brick faces black with soot and streaked with water stains. A single gas lamp flickered at the far end, casting a weak yellow glow that barely penetrated the darkness. The ground was uneven, littered with broken crates and discarded bottles and something that might have been animal waste. Pearl kept to the center, her boots careful on the wet stones, her hand closed around the brass scissors in her pocket. She walked, fast. Her breath came in short pulls. Her shoulder throbbed. The rain soaked through her coat, her blouse, her shirt, settling into her skin like a second layer of cold. She did not look back. She did not slow down. She walked toward the gas lamp at the end of the alley, her eyes scanning the walls, the rooftops, the shadows between the buildings. The alley opened onto a wider street, Delancey. Pearl turned left, as Alina had instructed, and walked toward the gate. It was iron, rusted, half-hidden behind a pile of discarded crates. She pushed through, the bars cold and rough against her palms, and emerged into a vacant lot. The church was on the other side, its steeple visible against the gray sky, its windows dark and empty. The subway entrance was across the lot, a set of iron stairs descending into darkness, flanked by a brick wall on one side and a chain-link fence on the other. Pearl approached it quickly, her boots echoing on the wet cobblestones, her breath coming faster now. She could hear the rumble of a train underground, a distant vibration that traveled through the ground and up through the soles of her shoes. She descended the stairs, two at a time. Her shoulder protested, her legs burned, but she kept going. The platform below was empty, the tiles white and cracked, the advertisements on the walls faded and peeling. A single gas lamp burned at the far end, casting a weak light over the empty benches and the trash-strewn floor. Pearl walked to the bench nearest the stairs and sat down. She set her hands on her knees and breathed. In, out, the rhythm was steady, controlled. The train was coming. She could feel it in the vibration of the tracks, in the rush of air that preceded it, in the distant whistle that echoed through the tunnel. She reached into her pocket. The brass scissors were there. She closed her fingers around them and felt their weight, their familiar smoothness, the wear on the handles from years of use. She had carried them since childhood. Her father had given them to her on her 12th birthday, the same day he had taught her how to tie a silk knot. For cutting, he had said, and for remembering. She had forgotten the second part until now. Until this moment, sitting on a wet bench in an empty subway station, her coat soaked through, her shoulder bruised, her notebook pressed against her ribs like a second heart. The train arrived with a shriek of metal on metal, a blast of wind, a shower of sparks from the third rail. Pearl stood as the car pulled in, its windows fogged with condensation, its gas lamps glowing orange against the darkness of the tunnel. The doors opened. No one got off. No one got on. The car was empty. Pearl stepped inside. The doors closed behind her with a hiss of hydraulics. The train lurched forward, and she sank back onto the vinyl seat, her eyes closing, her body trembling with exhaustion. She should have been asleep. She should have been resting. Instead, she reached into her coat and pulled out the notebook. It was damp. The cover was wet, the pages sticking together at the edges. She opened it carefully, her fingers working between the sheets, separating them one by one. The left-hand page, the one with her father's handwriting, was ruined. The ink had bled, the names smudged into illegible streaks, the diagrams dissolved into gray blurs. The right-hand page, the one with her own work, the cross-references, the dates, the amounts, was salvageable. Most of it. The bottom half was waterlogged, the ink running, but the top two-thirds were intact. Pearl traced the words with her fingertip, feeling the ridges where the ink had pooled and dried, reading the names and dates and numbers that linked Vane to Blackwell. Selah's Vane, Astrid Blackwell, the shipping manifests, the donation receipts, the silk knots, 3 months of work, 3 months of transcription, and now half of it was gone. She closed the notebook, set it on her lap, closed her eyes. The train rattled through the tunnel, the wheels singing against the tracks, the gas lamps flickering overhead. Pearl sat in the darkness and held the damaged pages of her father's legacy in her lap and tried to memorize what she could before the ink ran completely. The train slowed, the doors opened. Pearl stood. She stepped onto the platform at Delancey and walked toward the stairs. She climbed them two at a time, her legs burning, her shoulders screaming, her breath coming in short, controlled pulls. She emerged onto the street and turned west, toward the river, toward the silence, toward whatever came next. She did not notice the man standing in the doorway of a closed bakery across the street. She did not see him until it was too late. He was tall, broad-shouldered, wearing a gray coat. He stepped out of the doorway as she passed, not toward her, not away from her, just stepping into the street, blocking her path, his face flat and featureless in the gaslight, his hands in his pockets. Pearl stopped, her hand went to her pocket, the brass scissors were there, cold metal, familiar weight. The man in gray coat tilted his head. A fraction of a second, an acknowledgement, then he spoke. "You're leaking," he said. Pearl didn't understand. Not at first. Then she felt at the weight in her inner pocket, the hard rectangle against her ribs, the dampness spreading through her blouse. She reached up and pulled out the notebook. It was gone, not wet, not damaged. Gone, her inner pocket was empty. The notebook was gone. She patted her coat, her blouse, her skirt. Nothing, the notebook had fallen out. Somewhere in the alley, on the stairs, in the subway car, she couldn't say, she didn't care. All she knew was that it was gone. The man in gray coat was looking at her empty pocket. His expression had not changed. Flat, detached, satisfied. "You're leaking," he said again. Pearl looked at him. Then she looked past him down the street into the darkness beyond the gaslight. She saw movement. A figure in a gray coat standing in the doorway of a saloon. Another figure further down leaning against a lamppost. Three, four, more, they were everywhere. They had been everywhere. She turned and ran. Not toward the river, not toward the silence, away. Down the street, past the closed shops, past the empty lots, past the gas lamps that cast long, distorted shadows on the wet cobblestones. She ran fast, her boots splashing through puddles, her breath ragged, her shoulder a white-hot line of pain. She did not look back. She did not slow down. She ran until her legs burned, until her throat was raw, until the city blurred around her and the rain fell harder and the night swallowed her whole. She stopped in an alley she did not recognize, her hands on her knees, her breath coming in gasps, her vision swimming. She looked down at her inner pocket. Empty. The notebook was gone. The link between Vane and Blackwell was gone. Everything she had spent 3 months transcribing, cross-referencing, connecting all of it was gone. She stood, straightened, wiped the rain from her face with the back of her hand. She was not crying. She had not cried since the depot. She would not cry now. The city swallowed her silence, indifferent to the weight she carried or the path she chose to take.